Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, this week we're going to talk with Gil Johnson, who, despite losing all of his sight at a very early age, does all kinds of home repair around the house and outside the house.
But first, we normally have a tip of the week at this point, but we have some very exciting news, and we're so excited about this, we're going to repeat it this week, even though we gave the same news item last week. Well, about a week ago, Eyes on Success, which at the time was known as Viewpoints, won the 2012 IAAIS Program of the Year Award in the Consumer Information category. And in particular, the show that won for that competition was number 1242, about downloading and reading books on a smartphone. And we included demonstrations of the Read2Go app from Bookshare, the Overdrive app from the public library, and the Learning Ally app. And in case you don't know, the IAAIS is the International Association of Audio Information Services. So if you're hearing this over a radio reading service, it's probably through the auspices of the IAAIS. And the IAAIS represents over 140 services throughout the U.S., as well as in Canada, the United Kingdom, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, and South Africa.
And again, we encourage the IAAIS program managers and people who run the radio reading services to let us know what you think of the show by sending us a note using the email hosts@eyesonsuccess.net. And if you like, we might even consider doing a custom promo for your weekly airing of the show.
Okay, so now getting into the topic for this week about doing home repair or woodworking with a visual impairment, let's meet Gil Johnson.
Can you start by introducing yourself?
Yes, my name is Gil Johnson. I live in California near San Francisco in the East Bay, and I'm pleased to be on the program today.
Now, many of our listeners have visual impairments. Do you?
Yes, I am totally blind. I had some vision up until I was 14, not a lot, but enough to tell colors and see sunsets. But since age 14, I'm totally blind. I'm currently 75 and otherwise in good health.
And what was the cause of your blindness?
I had congenital glaucoma from childhood. They did two or three surgeries before I was age 5 and saved the vision they could, but it wasn't very much.
So when you were educated as a youngster, did you learn Braille? You probably weren't mainstreamed back then.
No, I went to the Minnesota Braille and Sight-Saving School. It's now called the Minnesota Academy. And yes, I was taught Braille in the first grade, so I use Braille extensively. I have for my whole life.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
For this week's focus topic, we'll talk with Gil Johnson about how somebody with little or no vision can successfully do home repairs and or woodworking projects.
We first heard about you because there was a reference in the Top Tech Tidbits to a blog that you maintain on home repair. Can you talk a little bit about the blog, and then we'll get into some details of advice you have for visually impaired people who want to do their own home repairs?
I'd be happy to. For the last 16 years of my work life, I worked for the American Foundation for the Blind. Well, after I retired, they put together a portion of their website directed toward people who in later life had lost vision. And we came up with the idea of doing some guides that might encourage people who maybe had done some home repairs or woodworking lost vision, but had kind of given it up, like they couldn't do it. So I started to write 10 home repair guides on the website, and I can give you that web address.
Yeah, would you please?
Sure. It's actually now called Vision Aware, but it's part of AFB's website. So the URL is visionaware.org. There is a link to Gill's Home Repair Guides.
So I would guess if you wrote these blogs, you must be pretty good with your hands and like fix-it jobs. Is this something you were always good at, or did you pick up later in life?
I began tinkering with doing things with some tools when I was like 8 or 9 years old. And then I kind of got interested more in working with wood and repairing things. My dad was a plumber, so I knew quite a bit about his tools, or I learned from him. He encouraged me, and I began to learn and experiment. And the first thing I remember having built was kind of a clunky-looking wooden truck. And, you know, I got the wheels on it, and it didn't wobble, and it rolled, and I thought, this is pretty cool. So then I began to branch out and gradually acquired more skills and some tools. I got my first table saw when I was about 12, I think, 11 or 12, and began to use that and, you know, building, you know, cutting boards and building things.
So just to clarify for our listeners, by that point, when you were 8, 10, 12 years old, you already had pretty low vision, even though you could see some very large objects. You never really could see well enough to see the wood pieces you were working on, I guess.
No, although I did enjoy looking at, you know, I had to get it up very close, but looking at the grain of some of the hardwoods that we had around the house. But my work with wood and with home repairs, both of those things, have always been done from a non-visual standpoint.
So as we all know, young people are indestructible at that age, or so they might believe. What was the reaction of your parents to you handling power equipment?
They didn't say too much. I bought the saw with money that I'd earned from doing other things, other chores, and I had it down in the basement. My dad would come down occasionally, and, you know, we would talk, and he would watch me.
He could do a finger count.
He never said, but there was never any blood downstairs, so they were surprisingly quietly supportive of my work and what I wanted to do.
In the course of this show, we're going to be mentioning lots of different kinds of saws. And for those of you who aren't familiar with a table saw, that's the one that has a large metal table, so it's a large horizontal metal surface on legs, about the size and shape of a small table. And then in the middle of it is a blade that's about the size of a record album, only with really big teeth. And it's positioned about a horizontal axis. And so as it spins, these teeth are coming towards not just the piece of wood that it's trying to cut, but you also. So it's really important to be careful in order to use this thing safely.
So it sounds like you've been doing this for quite some time in a variety of circumstances. What are some of the more complex or intricate types of work you've done?
I'm proud to say that when I was in high school, I took a shop class. And in that shop, I made a chessboard. The frame of the board was walnut, I believe, and then the darker square was a dark wood. They were about inch squares, and then the lower square was a lighter wood, so there was good contrast. That didn't matter to me, but, you know, for sighted people playing chess, that mattered a lot. And then I drilled holes in the squares and holes in the chessmen and put a peg in them. And then, of course, the pegs would go on the holes in the board and then the chessmen. I could feel the board all over, and it would knock the men around.
Oh, that's great. So this is a chess set that was actually practical for your use.
Yes. And I still have it to this day. As a matter of fact, about a week ago, my 8-year-old grandson beat me at chess.
You were probably as happy, or if not happier, than he was when that happened.
I was. I was proud of him. The other accomplishment that I had when I was in high school is that I built a 9-drawer desk out of birch wood, and we still use that desk today. It's in our office area. My wife uses it all the time, and I was really proud of having done that. I did that at home and, you know, got a lot of encouragement from my uncle, who was a carpenter. I was and still am very proud of that desk. Over the years, I've built a number of pieces of furniture, dressers and nightstands, bookcases, 3 sets of bunk beds for grandkids, things of that sort. And then I've done always have done a lot of repairs around the house, dripping faucet, a light switch that needed to be replaced. So I've done things of that sort as well.
So I'm curious, a lot of these woodworking projects and furniture building projects, they sound like they used some pretty intense power tools. And even sighted people are oftentimes wary of working with a table saw. You can easily lose fingers. Do you have any safety tips for people who are using power tools without being able to see?
I do, and most of them are the same safety tips that any careful home woodworker would use. First of all, one of the most important is if you're tired or frustrated, or if you've been drinking or drugs, don't go in the shop. That's just inviting an accident, because if you're tired, let's say, your reflexes are not going to be as good. You're not going to be as aware of where your hands are and where that spinning saw blade is. And that's when accidents can occur. I would say that's probably my number one safety tip, and that applies to anybody. I happen to be kind of a person that likes my shop to be fairly neat. I don't care if it has sawdust on the floor. Matter of fact, I like that. But I keep my workbenches pretty clear, except for tools that I'm using at the moment. I don't let wood just lay on the floor, because it's too easy to trip. And if you trip, that's when you can fall and get hurt. I also think it's really important to plan out as much as you can in advance what you want to do. I have a pretty good ability to visualize how something will look. I visualize it in my mind. And sometimes I'll make a model before I start using expensive hardwood. But sometimes not. I just go ahead and do it. But that, I think, also helps with safety, because if I do it step by step, I'm not as likely to get into trouble. People, you know, when they think about a blind person using a table saw or a radial arm saw, that is a saw that you pull toward you and the blade is spinning and you pull it across the board, they think about those things and they, you know, many people will just shudder and they don't even want to watch it. I respect that spinning blade. I know what it can do. I still have all 10 of my fingers.
I was going to ask that at the end.
No, I have them all.
I know many sighted people who don't, who do a lot of woodworking.
I know of some also. I do have some scars, and, you know, anybody that works with their hands does, because as a blind person, you see with your hands, and you've got to touch. And you touch and you get a splinter, or the screwdriver slips and it hits your finger, or you hit your finger with a hammer, all those things. But with the table saw, if I'm cutting a board, I'm very careful about making sure that the board is held down securely. I use what they call push sticks to hold the board down against the table. And if it's a narrow cut, I'll use another push stick to push it through the blade. So my hands are always, you know, several inches away from that blade. And a board can still, what they would describe as, kick back.
I've heard of that happening when you hit a knothole or something.
You hit a knothole or, worse yet, you hit a nail. It can be kicked back at a very high rate of speed, and that can hurt. And so I always make a point to stand a little bit off to the side of the line of the blade, comfortably so that I can reach it, but my body is out of the way. That has kept me from being hit by flying boards on several occasions.
So do you wear any other safety equipment, safety glasses, or anything else that would protect your body?
No, I don't. Mm-hmm. No, I don't. But what I do is I make sure that any clothing I wear is not loose, you know, like loosely fitting sleeves on a shirt or a sweatshirt or something. And I always wear closed-toed shoes because the board is always going to fall off of the workbench, and you don't want that hitting open-toed shoes or, worse yet, barefoot. So I do that. But other than that, no, I do not wear safety goggles or anything of that sort.
Well, I must say, I am a big advocate of wearing eye protection. I mean, first of all, if you do have some limited vision, you really do want to protect what limited vision you have. And the best way to do that is with some kind of glasses, and even get some kind of polycarbonate glass if you get glasses from a normal glasses store. But even if you don't have any vision, like, you know, I don't have much usable vision these days. I can hardly tell if the lights are on in a room. I still wear glasses. Glasses still can come in useful for several reasons. I had the experience when I was about 30, when I didn't wear glasses, of scratching my cornea because I don't blink when I walk into things. And that can be very painful, and it took quite a while to heal. And even now, when I'm walking through the woods, for example, you know, I don't like the idea of a branch coming out and scratching my eye. The other reason for wearing glasses is, you know, if you've had a number of surgeries, your eyes may be red or scarred, and sometimes just the reflection from the glasses or looking through the glass by other people, your eyes just don't appear to be as bad as they are, and it takes a little bit of focus off that. So it can be somewhat of a cosmetic thing also.
Well, I always wear safety glasses when I'm doing home repair projects or building something or anything with power tools. I just think it's a precaution that's worth taking.
So you've obviously been doing this for a very long time and are very comfortable with the tools and the methods. And you almost make it sound like, well, you know, if you're blind, what the heck? You can do all these things. It's real simple. But there must be some challenges, particularly for people who aren't so used to doing home repairs or working with power tools. What are some of the challenges that you think you had to overcome or other people might have to overcome?
I would say this, that there are two tools that I won't use. One of them is a chainsaw. Now, there are blind folks that safely use chainsaws, and my hat's off to them, but I'm not one of them. And the other one is I don't use a bandsaw, and I'm not comfortable with that, and I don't know that I ever will be. And I think really the most important thing for people to develop is the self-confidence that if you're careful and if you know where you are at all times and where that spinning blade is, or the hammer, or, you know, whatever tool you're using, that you can, in fact, do it very safely, even though, you know, you're not seeing it. What I think is more of a struggle is somebody who has some vision, maybe low vision, who tries to use a vision, and it's not really sufficient for them to do what they're trying to do with it. And that's pretty dangerous, I think. And I always advise folks like that to try to think about doing it without looking. Put on a pair of goggles, put on a pair of sleep shades if you want to. Keep yourself from trying to use that low amount of vision that you have.
Now, Gil mentioned that he won't use a chainsaw, and frankly, neither will I. And there are quite a few sighted people and blind people who are terrified of chainsaws. These are the ones where you're holding a freestanding motor and it's got a kind of a paddle sticking out. And this paddle can be anywhere upwards of a foot long. And then whizzing around the edge of the paddle is the actual chain blade, and it's like a bicycle chain with big teeth, and it's exposed. There's nothing protecting it or you, and it's very easy for that to get caught in a tree branch. And then when it kicks back, if you're on a ladder holding it and it's still spinning around, this can get dangerous. So Gil is being quite sensible by avoiding using a chainsaw.
Well, I was wondering how you manage to make cuts that are straight. That has to be a little tricky.
I can cut as straight a line as anybody can that's following a pencil line. Actually, I think my lines are straighter. And what I do is clamp down a straight edge on the board, allowing enough space for the saw to go. And the edge of the, sometimes they're called a skill saw or a power handsaw, the base of the housing that the saw is on slides along the straight edge, and you can get as straight a cut with that as ever you would want.
So you use this as a guide, essentially.
Exactly, right. Mm-hmm.
So any of these home repair projects or woodworking building projects require that you do lots of accurate measurements. How do you do that?
Getting an accurate measurement is, that's really the only tool that I use that's specifically modified to be used by blind persons. I use what's called a click rule, and this is a device, when it's fully extended, it's a foot long, and it has a rod that slips inside of a housing, and as you move it, it clicks at 1/16th of an inch. So you can measure anywhere from 0 inches up to 1 foot by 1/16. And then you can put an extension rod in there that will make it go out to 2 feet, 3 feet. Mine, I have enough extension rods, I can measure out to 8 feet by 1/16.
And are these available at ordinary hardware stores?
No, that's a specialty item. I know that there's a dealership in Colorado or Nebraska that handles them. The NFB store in Baltimore used to carry them, and I think they still do. But I've had mine for like 40 years, so it's a good investment. Otherwise, there's other ways you can kind of work around making measurements, but you can't get it as accurate, I don't think, as you can with a click rule. Or there's another device that's called a rotomatic. It's the same principle. And you can actually even get down to 1/64. In woodworking, you don't usually need that amount of accuracy. But you can get it if you want to.
Well, one other thing I've discovered, I'm the one at this household that does the home repair projects, and every once in a while it'll come down to buying a 4x8 foot sheet of plywood, and of course we don't have a car in which a 4x8 sheet of plywood will fit.
Right.
But the major home repair stores and lumber yards around here, if you want to buy a 4x8 foot sheet of plywood or a 2x4 or anything that's bigger than you want to end up having, they're very accommodating about making some straight cuts for you. And so if somebody's uneasy about using a table saw to do the rough cutting and then wants to do all the finer work themselves, they can just get somebody at the lumber yard to cut it down into the size pieces they're going to want to use.
You're absolutely right. It's a real convenience, both because of transporting larger pieces of wood, if somebody doesn't have a way to do that, and having it cut the size to be finished at home. That's, I think, an excellent suggestion.
There must be some times when you require some sighted assistance, or you would recommend a blind person get some sighted assistance.
Oh, absolutely. I know what I can do well, and I know what I'm not good at. I'm not good at putting finishes on products, paint, varnish, you know, stains, that kind of thing. My wife is good at that, and she doesn't mind doing it. And if she can't, then I've prevailed sometimes on neighbors or other people to do that. And, you know, I'll do all the prep work that I can. I'll sand it and have it all assembled and so forth. Same thing with gluing. I'm not good at gluing. You put your finger in it, and your finger it, and you can't tell where the glue is or isn't.
And that's it for that finger. You can't use it again, right?
That's right. Also in that case, when, you know, I'll prepare something, I'll size it up, I'll get it set up with, get the clamps ready to hold it together and so forth, and then I'll ask for help to do that. With some of the home repair tasks that that I've written about, obviously color coding wiring, you know, you're supposed to have it done in a certain way. Black wires are supposed to be hooked to black wires. I can't obviously tell the black wires, and I don't have one of the color identifiers. So I'll cut off a little piece of insulation and bring it to where my wife is or one of my grandkids, ask them what color it is. If it's black, I'll go back to the wire and I'll put a piece of tape around the insulation so I know that's the black wire. So, I mean, there's another instance where having that kind of assistance is absolutely essential.
Now for this week's high-tech item, how to get to Gil's Guide to Home Repair on the American Foundation for the Blind's Vision Aware website, and how to find some other valuable online resources.
So Gil, up to now we've talked mostly about home repair centering around carpentry, but what other topics are covered in your Vision Aware website?
It's things like unclogging clogged up drains. You know, that can be a tub or a shower or a sink or a toilet. So that was one. Replacing faulty light switches and wall outlets was another one. Installing a ceiling fan. Replacing faucet washers. Faucets are changing now, so they have to be replaced less often. Replacing the washer is pretty easy to do and very satisfying, because if the faucet isn't dripping anymore, everybody knows it. I did one on replacing blown fuses and resetting circuit breakers. Fixing toilets that won't shut off.
Sounds like you've covered just about everything that can go wrong around the house.
What other useful resources do you refer to?
Woodworking for the Blind and On the House are just two of my very favorite websites.
Well, Gil very kindly offered to write or talk with anybody who's listening to this show and might have further questions, and here's how to reach him.
If you go to Vision Aware, look for Gil's Home Repair Guides or Gil's Guides, there'll be a link to the message board and you can leave me a message.
Now, as usual, we'll have that information as well as all of the other links and how to find some of these great tools that he's been using in the show notes, which you can find at our website at www.eyesonsuccess.net. That's it for show number 1325. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about the MathTrax graphing tools for the blind. MathTrax is a powerful software tool that combines mathematical analysis, graphing, and sonification to represent complex equations and data. And we'll be talking with Robert Shelton, the developer of MathTrax, about its capabilities, including numerous demonstrations.
If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook at Eyes on Success and on Twitter at @EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.